Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Great to be with you here on this Wednesday. We got a lot going on today. Ray Fittipaldo's on the show today. And that's the one we had set up here, right?
We did. Yep. 3:35 for Ray.
Yeah. Now, we also have Dave Revson, Big Ten Network.
Rever.
Roxy Bernstein, Pac-12 Network. And Dave Hunsinger, to give us a Big 12 perspective from the Oklahoma State Radio Network. It's all today's show. All right. Now, to you, my good friend, my deepest and sincerest apologies.
Oh, all good. No problem.
And to the audience, my deepest and sincerest apologies. As you know, the physical setup is that for me to get here, I have to go over in College Township Branch Road to get to the Sunbury Motor Studio. Beginning at the, July 23rd, something like that, they took out the bridge at Center Hills Country Club, which means I can't come in that way unless I'm Evel Knievel. So I had to go all the way around. All right, well, that's not an issue. I can go all the way around and come in from the other side, but it's more time-consuming to do. Well, I'm coming down Whitehall Road, which then just becomes University Drive. And there's four cars in front of me, and the lead vehicle is a lawn mowing tractor, like one of those big lawn mowing tractors with obviously the little yield sign in the back of it. I looked at that, I thought, uh-oh, we have a problem here. Well, he starts up and starts going up the hill at University Drive, and I'm going 8 miles per hour. Eight. But this will be easily remedied because the lead car will be smart enough to know, let's just take the center turning lane on University Drive and go around this dude. He doesn't do it. Like, what are you doing? Now, I'm five cars back. I can't just sit there and get in the center turn lane and blow off four cars in front of me in the tractor. I can't do that. I'm driving eight. Then we hit a hill. We're going 12. I mean, going downhill. It's all good. So I apologize, Sean.
That's all good. We were just catching up with some headlines here. So mentioned about Pete Rose no longer now going to be part of Alumni Weekend next weekend.
Yeah, that's a bad one.
Yeah, timing not too good there.
I mean, I don't, nobody knows what's true and what isn't, but the report claims that she was under the age of 16. Okay. Wow. And this is back in the 70s, by the way. It's not from now. But that's... The fans are the ones that voted him in. The Phillies can't have him there with that kind of allegation here. Sitting there. Can't. And I think this is all part of the suit that he's brought against John Dowd. I believe in interviews Dowd did when the All-Star game was in Cincinnati 2 years ago. And he did a bunch. Dowd did a series of interviews, and I think that's what he's suing him over. And now, for Dowd, they're throwing this allegation out there from his side. So, now, if she's, I think there's a claim from Rose in there, if I'm correct, that they were just together in Ohio. And she says no. And, of course, the Reds used to train in Florida. I think I want to say Plant City, someplace down there like that. Well, say, for example, just as an example, she went there. You know what the age of consent in Florida is? It's 18. This is, to its credit, it's very, very messy. What a mess. Wow. I saw a baseball game last night on TV. The most entertaining baseball game I've seen all year. And it was the Red Sox-Indians game last night on MLB Network. Bob Costas did the game last night with Jim Cott, and Tom Verducci was there. Sean, you know, I always talk about every game takes on its own personality and don't. As much as we do on shows such as these where we try to give you a feel as to where, you know, what you should be looking for. Now, if we were doing the show yesterday and we were previewing tomorrow's game or last night's game between Cleveland and Boston, you'd have Carrasco on the mound for Cleveland and Sale. Now, you're looking at a 2-1, 3-2 kind of game with that kind of quality starting pitching out there. Each team quality closer, Cody Allen for the Indians. Kimbrel's been great for the Red Sox. And you want to know what all four of those guys had in common last night? They all stunk. It just was not their night. Not one of them pitched well. The Indians got three off of Sale in the first. Sale has not given up. Only one time this year had Sale given up five earned runs in a game. Only one time. One. So he gives up three runs in the first, gives up a two-run homer in the second. They're down 5-0. Yeah, you got Carrasco out there. And the Red Sox against Carrasco knock him around, get five runs in the bottom of the second or third inning, and knock him out of the game. Now it's 5-5. Sale settles down, scoreless fourth, scoreless fifth. Then in the sixth inning, he gives up a two-run homer. I think it was Sanchez hit the home run, I think. He gives up a two-run homer. It's 7-5 now. Cleveland. The Red Sox then score four runs against the bullpen, including Andrew Miller, to take the lead 9-7. Okay. All right. They're in good shape now. Now I'm watching my team here. They're in good shape. They've acquired Addison Reed from the Mets. He's supposed to be the eighth inning guy. Comes in there. First guy he faces, home run to the bullpen. All right, it's 9-8. Like, okay. That's all right. We got Kimbrel. This all kind of reminds me of that old joke about filming the burning of Rome. Where they go down, they film the spectacular scene, and they actually burn whatever town it is to the ground. They've made a previous agreement. And, of course, you know, I film a scene like that once. There are three mountains overlooking the city. And the director calls up to the first mountain. He says, "Did you get it?" He goes, "No, we had a power outage out here. No. They couldn't get it." Oh, jeez. He calls to the second mountain. "Did you get it?" He says, "Oh." He says, "Intern came running over, hit the camera, rolled down the mountain into the fire." He goes, "Oh, it's all right. We got a third one. Did you get it?" He says, "Hey, we're ready when you are." Like, oh, no. Well, that was last night's game. They bring in Kimbrel to lock it down in the ninth inning. Kimbrel has blown, to this point, three saves all year. And he blew a fourth one last night. You know, you want to know what all four have in common? each one of them, he gave up a leadoff homer in the ninth inning. In each blown save, he gave up a leadoff homer in the ninth inning. Gives up a leadoff homer to Lindor last night in the ninth inning, ties the game at nine. Then the Indians, right, load the bases up. He throws a wild pitch. Indians are up 10-9. Pitches way out of the inning. They're done. Now they go to the bottom of the ninth. Yeah, Bradley flies out. Then Devers, the kid, the 20-year-old, they just called up from Pawtucket. Baltimore chop base hit. Great. Now you got Moreland up. And Moreland's had a good night. Moreland's homered. He's doubled. And they go, Allen goes 0-2 on Moreland. Okay. And he throws it, went down and away. It gets away from the catcher. And Moreland checked his swing, and the home plate umpire said no. And then they appealed. Then he asked for advice down at third, and he rang him up. Well, the ball got away, so Moreland ran to first. Because you can run to first with first base occupied with two outs. You can do that. So now you got first and second. Allen then has Vasquez at the plate. He uncorks a wild pitch. They move to second and third. And then Vasquez hits it over the center field wall for a home run. I mean, the as entertaining, even Bob Costa said at the end of the game, he says this rejuvenates me about baseball. It was as entertaining as any game I've seen. Now, obviously, you feel like you're more entertained when your team wins. You'd be amazed how the entertainment level goes exponentially higher. But just and last night, I saw one of the greatest catches I've ever seen in my life. It might be the best catch I've seen in my life. I thought Jackie Bradley made a catch off Aaron Judge 2 weeks ago. It was the best I ever saw. I saw Fred Lynn make a catch against the Twins in Minnesota back in 75, 76, 77, somewhere around there. But Austin Jackson made the best catch I've ever seen last night. Hanley Ramirez hit it to dead center. And toward the bullpen. And he went up over the bullpen. First he leaped up, went over the bullpen, flipped into the bullpen, and never dropped it. How the heck do you do that? It was remarkable. The best catch I've ever seen. The game had a little bit of everything last night. All right, coming up, Ray Fittipaldo, old friend, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. It'll be great to talk to Ray a little bit later. Dave Revson from Big Ten Network on the show today.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on the show today. A little bit later, Dave Revson, Big Ten Network. Dave Hunsinger from Oklahoma State. Roxy Bernstein from the Pac-12 Network all on today's show. But let's check in on the Pittsburgh Steelers. An old friend, respected friend, and that is Ray Fittipaldo from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Ray, it's great to hear you on the other end again.
Hey, Steve. How's it going? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no, it's great to hear you again. I hope everything's going well for you.
Yeah, well, we're about a week into training camp, so about, 2.5-3 weeks more, and I'll probably be a little bit happier once everything is back in Pittsburgh, but it's all part of the grind, you know?
It is part of the grind, and I want to ask you about that part of the grind. How, over the years, have you adjusted and found a better way to cover the grind just because of experience?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I mean, the way the Post-Gazette does it, we throw a lot of resources at the Steelers. I mean, we have two or three, maybe even four people up there writing stories each day. So the way it is now with newspapers going digital as much as they are, and we've certainly embraced that, you know, we're getting stories. We do interviews at lunchtime. We get those stories up at lunchtime. You know, you go to practice, you get you write more stories, you post after practice. So I think just the way the industry is going, and if you don't embrace it, you're going to fall behind. So I think just we're writing more. We might not be writing as many in-depth stories, but I think, you know, we're giving the people what they want. And, you know, as long as people are subscribing to the paper, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, no question about that. So far, when you've been there, what are a couple of stories that you've found interesting, intriguing, that kind of whet your appetite a bit?
Well, that's a good question. Well, this year, the situation at right outside linebacker with T.J. Watt, and I know we're only a week into this, Steve, but he's looked really impressive. I know you had a chance to watch him in the Big Ten the last couple of years, and you know he only played outside linebacker for a short time for the Badgers, but he has been really impressive on the practice field. He was great in the they have a drill called backs on backers. They did it the first day in pads, where the outside linebackers and inside linebackers line up and they rush against the tight ends and the running backs, and he absolutely dominated that drill. And some people will say, well, yeah, he should. You know, he's going up against, you know, lighter guys. He's going up, going to be pass rushing against tackles, you know, when it counts. And that's true. But when he got into team drills later that day, he had a rush against Al Villanueva, who's about 6'9", 340 or 350. He got his hands inside on Villanueva and almost put Villanueva on his back. So he's been really impressive so far. James Harrison isn't practicing yet. They're probably going to share that spot. But for the first week, Steve, T.J. Watt has been really, really good.
Ray, what do you expect when it comes to Le'Veon Bell? How late? How long? I mean, what's the gut feeling as to how long he takes this thing?
Well, no one really knows for sure. His camp is keeping quiet about it. The date that I sort of predicted, I think the earliest he would report is probably August 21st. They break camp up in Latrobe on August 18th. They have a home preseason game against the Falcons on the 20th. That would be their second preseason game. So that would give them about two and a half weeks to, you know, sort of get in the swing of things and, you know, maybe get a couple of snaps and, you know, one of the two final preseason games. But, you know, you hear from some other sources where he might stay out until just, you know, the week before the game. So I don't think there's any – the Steelers don't have any issues with Le'Veon Bell coming in condition. I think they know he's going to be healthy and he's going to be strong when he comes in. I think the worry is just, you know, knocking that rust off for whatever period it turns out to be. They don't want to put him in harm's way just, you know, jumping right into a game. But at this point, you know, just 1 week into camp, I don't think the Steelers are too, you know, overly concerned about that issue right now.
A lot of young players last year in the secondary a year ago this week. Now we've had a season where Artie Burns and Sean Davis have both played. Have you seen a discernible secondary difference in this team because now there's a little bit more experience back there?
Yeah, I mean, Artie Burns has been going rep for rep with Antonio Brown, and, you know, Brown's one of the best receivers in the NFL. He's going to win that matchup, you know, 75-80% of the time, and he does. But, you know, for Artie Burns, you know, he can get his butt kicked up there, but when he goes back, you know, during the regular season, even during the preseason, when he starts playing other people, it's not going to be that hard. So I think that's only going to help him. And if you talk to Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger, talked about it today, they see a lot of growth in Artie Burns. So Artie Burns is going to be their top corner. As you mentioned, Sean Davis is also going into his second year. He started about half the season last year. They inserted him into the lineup about midway through last year, and he was really good too. So they're young in the secondary, but the good thing for the Steelers and their coaches is they got a lot of experience and, they got a lot of those growing pains out of the way last year when they were rookies. And I do expect them to be better this year. How much better? You know, can they take that next step and, you know, and be really good against a team like the Patriots? I don't know that, but I do think they're going to be much better just because of that experience.
What would it mean to the Steelers defensively if Ryan Shazier can play all 16 games and Bud Dupree can play the majority of the season?
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Shazier made the Pro Bowl for the first time last year, and he only played in 13 games, and that's the most games he's ever played in. So I think if he could play a full 16-game season and not get nicked up the way he has, he's got all pro potential. I mean, you probably remember him from his days at Ohio State. He's a dynamic football player, and when he's right, he can make that defense go. And you know, same thing with Bud Dupree. He didn't quite make the impact that Shazier did last year, mainly because he was hurt for half the season. But when he came off the PUP list and he started, I think, about the final 7 or 8 games of the season, he was really good, too, and he was excellent in the playoffs. You know, other than that game against the Patriots when it seemed like everyone was below the line, Bud Dupree was really good in those first 2 games. You know, the wild card game and in the divisional round game. So they got a lot of good young talent on that defense. Stephon Tuitt from Notre Dame is another guy who's a young guy who's on the come. So if all these guys can stay healthy and, you know, they experience isn't the issue. All these guys have played together for a long time now. Just sort of seems like every year one or two of them get nicked up and they sort of get behind the eight ball. They got to avoid the injuries this year. If they can avoid the injuries, I think that defense actually has a chance to be really good. I'm not going to say they're going to be, you know, like they were in 2005 or 2008 or even 2010, but I think they're going to be much better than they have been the past few years.
Yeah, Shazier picked off a pass in Beaver Stadium one night and ran it back for a touchdown, so I still got the shakes right. Just so you know.
He's a freak.
Offensively,
I mean,
obviously, this is Ben's show. Is there an appreciation in the city to have, I mean, I know he's he'll rub some people the wrong way, but to have a quarterback of that caliber with that kind of command?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'm sure you're aware of the retirement talk that seems to have been going on since the season ended. And, you know, he did nothing to quiet that last week when he talked to reporters. So I think all the people in Pittsburgh sort of hearken back to what it was like after Terry Bradshaw left. And they really had, like, you know, 20, 25 years there where it wasn't, they didn't have a quarterback, and they made the playoffs a few times. They even got to an AFC championship game with Mark Malone, but it's hard to win a Super Bowl if you don't have a franchise quarterback. So I think the Steelers, you know, the Steeler fans are, you know, they're crossing their fingers. They're hoping everyone stays healthy, and especially Ben, because if Ben goes down, you know, yeah, everything else goes down around him.
I have you, John Urschel, who obviously I know very, very well, surprised everyone and walked away from the game last week. And after that, and it came right after that report of 99 out of 100 CTE of brains that have been studied. Have you talked to any of the Steelers at all about that study? And if so, what did they say to you?
Ramon Foster was asked about it on the first day when they reported. And he says it's a known. I mean, at this point, everyone who plays in the NFL knows that's could happen to you. And you know, the way the studies are going right now, it seems like it very well could happen to you. So I think a lot of those guys sort of weigh that. They know that. Ben Roethlisberger talked about it last week too. He says, you know, he doesn't think his wife would mind at all if he walked away from the game. So, you know, that's a scary situation for NFL players. And, Steve, if you read that study, I think it's not getting a lot of play, but I think the numbers were like upward of 80% of the players who just played in college had CTE. So it's a very scary thing for all football players, but the percentage for the NFL players, that's really getting the attention of the guys in camp.
Now, part of this is not just games. Part of this is also contact that you'll get in practice. How different are the Steeler practices now, either by what you've seen or what you've heard from other people like an Ed Bouchette? How different are they now compared to maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago?
I mean, completely different. They used to I can remember covering 2-a-days under Bill Cowher. You know, they would practice in pads in the morning. They would come back in the afternoon, and it would be 90 degrees, and they'd be doing that again. The way the CBA is written now, they can go out there in the morning and have a walkthrough for about 45 minutes or an hour, but all those guys are in hats. I don't even think you're allowed to have your helmet you're allowed to have a ball out there, but, you know, there's not a lot you could even do with the football. So it's just completely different. You know, there was a time, Steve, when I covered the Steelers, I can remember players quitting, walking out of camp because it was too hard. You never see that now. You know, all you got to do is get through one practice a day. And, yeah, it's still taxing. It's still hot. It's still football. But it's nothing like it was even, 10, 15 years ago.
I felt in the games that I broadcast, Ray, that the way things are, because this is the first year, no two-a-days in college football and so forth. Penn State, the last few years, only had like 2-3 days of two-a-days anyway, and they didn't even take full advantage of it. But I felt that the one area where I've seen an effect, but it's usually just the first two or three games, is I felt I've seen poor version of tackling in the first two or three games, and then after that it settles down because now you've at least done it. What have you noticed at all in the NFL game because of fewer and fewer contact during the course of a practice week?
Yeah, I mean, your coaches complain about the tackling, and it's just, it stems to, what happens in the colleges, and all these guys are coming in, and they can't really coach them the way they coached them in the past. So I think coaches in the NFL, they just adjust and they roll with the punches. I mean, they do the same thing with personnel. I mean, I'm listening to NFL coaches complain about the college game not producing tight ends the way they used to, or if they're producing them now, they're the pass-catching type of tight end, or, they're not producing the big, strong pocket quarterbacks the way they used to. Now we're getting the guys who run the spread, so everything is different. I mean, offensive linemen sometimes don't even get down in a stance in college anymore. They're always playing in a two-point stance, so everything is completely different in that regard, and I think it helps to have good coaches. I mean, the Steelers have a guy like Mike Munchak, who is just a master technician, and you know him from Penn State, just fundamentals, and they're working shorter. They're not working the way they used to, but if you have a guy like that on your side, I think you have a leg up, and I think that's, you try to hire great coaches, and you try to have them work in the parameters and do the best you can.
One final question, Ray, I'll let you go, and I appreciate your time as always. It's been great to catch up with you again, and that deals with battles. What is a position battle, or maybe even a down-the-roster battle, that you've taken a little bit of an interest in that you think will bring some interest?
Well, there's not many. I mean, this team is pretty much set on offense and defense. But, we touched on it before Le'Veon Bell not being here. James Conner from Pitt looked really, really good before he got injured on Sunday. He looked really strong running, and he was physical. He was tough when they did the backs on backers drill. So everyone stood up and took notice when he was in there. Unfortunately for him, he's got a shoulder injury. It's considered minor. He might be back by the end of the week, but if he can stay healthy, that backup running back situation is going to be pretty interesting, because Le'Veon Bell's been a guy who hasn't been able to stay healthy for a whole season. And if that happens again, they got to have somebody behind him who can, sort of carry the load. And I think James Conner, if he does stay healthy, he can be that guy.
Yeah, Le'Veon Bell's played one full playoff game in his career. One.
And that's just one. Not good.
Ray, always a pleasure. It's great to hear you again. Great to catch up with you. Thanks a lot for your time.
All right, Steve. We'll talk to you later.
Ray Fittipaldo does a great job. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We will come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Did you see Eric Parseghian passed away this morning? 94 years old. Never met Eric Parseghian, but I interviewed Eric Parseghian. In fact, he gave me 30 minutes one day. And part of it dealt with college football, coaching, his thoughts, philosophy, and so forth. And part of it also dealt with his foundation. He had three grandchildren die of a very rare disease. And he started this foundation, so that's why that was part of the premise of the interview. And he was just a wonderful guy to talk to and to interview. Sports is, I mentioned, it's like anything. There's so much mythology in sports. Mythology, a lot of mythology. And, you know, it's easy to believe a story when it's not really the story. Remember, what's the story always been on Errol Parseghian? That he coached 3 years at Northwestern, made them really, really good, and Notre Dame absolutely had to get him. Right? That's always been the story. He coached Northwestern 3 years. He beat Notre Dame 3 years in a row. And then when Joe Q. Herrick left, they had to get Error to be their head coach. Not quite. I mean, Error Parseghian actually succeeded Woody Hayes at Miami, Ohio, and did a great job. When Hayes became the head coach at Ohio State, and he won a couple of MAC titles. Now he goes to Northwestern. Northwestern is just, you know, typical sad sack group. They went 0-8-1 under Lou Saban. All right. And so he becomes the head coach of Northwestern, and he does a whale of a job there. At one point, this the whole thing about the three seasons. He started coaching Northwestern in 1956. And he got them to number two in the country at one point in 1962. Now get this, in 63, right? He's not happy with the school's limited financial resources. He's not thrilled about the curbs on football scholarships. The academic standards, of course, are easily the highest of the Big Ten at that point. And so he has a clash with the AD, and the AD tells him after the 63 season, you're not coming back. They're not going to renew his contract. He's out of a job. He's out of a job at Northwestern. So he decided to call Father Joyce over at Notre Dame. Father Edmund Joyce was the one who was in charge of the athletics board at Notre Dame. And he calls Father Joyce up. And Hugh DeVore had taken over as the interim coach at Notre Dame for Joe Q. Herrick, and the Q. Herrick era was an on-field disaster at Notre Dame for 5 years. And he says, well, we're not going to bring Hugh DeVore back, but they were considering Dan Devine. Now, the irony is that when Errol Parseghian left Notre Dame finally in 1975, Dan Devine replaced him. But initially, Father Joyce, nah, we're not going to offer you the job. Okay. So Parseghian looks into the job at Miami, down in Florida. And then finally Notre Dame offers him the job, and Parseghian then says, I don't know if I really want the job, because his father was really upset about the Armenian deportations and was unhappy with the Catholic Church. That's why. Well, finally, Era takes the job. He wins two national titles in 66 and 73. Coaches in 74, and then retires. He had a great, great career. And as, again, about 20 years ago, I had a chance to interview him. It confirmed just a really special guy.
We're your home for news, sports, weather, and your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.